Can estrogen drops trigger migraines and headaches? I'm Dr. Valerie Davidson from Progress Your Health.
And I'm Dr. Robert Mackey from Progress Your Health. So today we're going to talk about estrogen, changing in estrogen and migraines, certainly something that we've seen quite a few times. Why don't you give a little background about, you know, where this question came from and, you know, what the issue is?
We've been kind of actually going through this a bit in our community. Our Progress Your Hormones community is talking about how when estrogen drops, that it can cause headaches and migraines, and it truly can. And I think we've neglected that on the podcast, so I'm glad that someone brought that to our attention so we could bring that up. In fact, you know, a lot of women will say, you know, hey, when I used to get my periods, I would have a headache, you know, right before my period. And then and even myself, when I started going through menopause, I was experiencing headaches, and I knew it was because my estrogen was dropping.
And you've never really had a headache problem.
Not really. No, not really. I mean, if you get dehydrated or something, you can have a little tension headache, but not really. And I did notice when I first started doing the rhythmic dosing myself, as I started off low, is on day 12 that estrogen really goes up, and then it really drops on day 13 mm-hmm. that I noticed that I would get a headache on day 13. So, you know, that's where that adjustment thing. But I don't think we ever really talked about it, that migraines are really common, in, especially in perimenopause. I think that's a big one. So I'd love to talk about perimenopause and how that creates migraines during, you know, if they're ovulating during possibly ovulation, and also that luteal phase before the period, and also women on HRT, if that estradiol is too low, is that, and that can truly cause headaches.
Now, you said something, so a premenstrual headache, so a woman still cycling on her own, right? And she's getting a period, she's getting a headache or a migraine before her period. Okay. So that's a different scenario than when your estrogen is going up and down in perimenopause and you're getting a headache. So can you explain the two scenarios there?
So, you know, when someone's cycling, they're ovulating, you know, quote unquote, on day 14, and then they get their period on day 28, is some when the estrogen and progesterone drop prior to their period, because that's what happens in that luteal phase if there's no fertilization, you know, pregnancy, is that estrogen and progesterone drop. As if that drops really fast, is that can trigger a, you know, a headache. So women.
So the drop in progesterone.
And estrogen, sorry. The drop in progesterone and in estrogen can trigger a headache. A lot of times that estradiol is connected to like the serotonin pathway, so that serotonin can drop and cause a headache. I think there's some other prostaglandins that start to mobilize before someone's
so
period.
So you said a fancy word there, prostaglandin.
Yes.
What's a prostaglandin?
You explain that one. That's a sciencey term.
Yeah, so prostaglandins, leukotrienes, they're basically like hormone. They're like hormones of your immune system in some respects, right? So a lot of PMS symptoms that women experience, or the menstrual cycle itself, is like this inflammatory kind of prostaglandin driven process. We'll talk about them later, but yeah, you just said prostaglandins. Yes. No one's going to know what a prostaglandin is.
Thank you for explaining that.
Yeah, I know there's a bunch of medications that you know, focus on prostaglandins and leukotrienes. Those are the two things, but basically they're kind of like hormones for the immune system.
Yeah, and I think there are some peptides that change before your period that can trigger a migraine. So that's more like a PMS, or, you know, for a menstruating female, where in perimenopause, you're going to have these kind of spikes, I mean, really high levels of estradiol, and then they drop back down.
Yeah.
So women in perimenopause can get migraines. They do normally notice them before their period, because that estradiol does really drop down, but they can notice migraines throughout their entire cycle. That's why I think a lot of women, when they are supposed to be ovulating, but they may not be ovulating, that estrogen couldn't really spike up as high, and then it really drops down. And so women will say mid-cycle, they do get, it triggers a migraine. So so that was one of the things with perimenopause versus a menstruating female. And then a menopausal woman that's on HRT, if the dose is too low, it can trigger migraine. If they forgot their hormones at home and went on vacation, it can trigger a migraine.
Sure. Yeah. So now, granted, that's what I've seen probably just in general from just memory, that a menopause-induced headaches or migraines. So they're in menopause, and all of a sudden they've never really had trouble before with migraines, and now they have no more estrogen left, and now they're developing migraines. Mm-hmm. Right. As opposed to, like you said, have you seen any correlation between, just from experience or observation, a connection between premenstrual headaches or migraines and menopausal migraines? Do the one lead to the other, or are those sort of two separate scenarios?
Oh, you mean somebody that did get premenstrual migraines?
And that, like I said, that 7 to 10 days before their period.
Are they more likely to get them in menopause? You know, I've never really looked at that. And I've had patients that I've known for, you know, over 20 years that before menopause and after menopause, I should probably, I'll think about that a little bit. Yeah, I mean, I could see the vulnerability there.
Sure, sure. And I don't know if I've seen those two situations separately, right? Very often, right? Yeah. There's the woman that is having the premenstrual, the luteal phase migraine or headache, and the menopausal-driven migraine or headache. But I'm not sure if I've noticed that the one that is prone to the premenstrual, if that, you know, this is just, you know, just banter on a podcast, but if there's a connection between one versus the other, because as we are alluding to, those are two completely separate hormonally driven problems, right? One is relatively a lack of progesterone, right? The premenstrual.
And the estrogen dropping prior.
As opposed to the menopausal one would be more of a lack of estrogen or estradiol than being a lack of progesterone. So there are two different problems. I'm not sure if I've seen a connection between those two, as opposed to just being two separate problems that you would, you know, that you'd deal with.
You know, with the menopausal HRT, having the migraines is adjusting the dose. We can do that. That's the nice thing is the ovaries, whether they're you've got them or you don't, they're not working in menopause. So it's almost like those little gremlins you can put to the side, and then you just work on the dose to kind of correct that for the patient. Or I feel like the women in perimenopause, they're kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place. You know, they don't want to take too much estrogen because that's going to exacerbate the huge spikes of when their estradiol goes up, but they need something to buffer the lows of estrogen that are creating not only just headaches and migraines, but other symptoms as well. So I feel like that's kind of a difficult place to be in.
What about, have you seen HRT of the different varieties causing migraines? Like the patch causing migraines? I've seen the patch cause migraines.
Yeah, I've seen the patch cause migraines. Of course, birth control pills, definitely that causes migraines. I wouldn't say so much when I've done the customized biased as much. So if someone is prone to it, I take that into consideration and we go slow. Because sometimes when you introduce estrogen too fast, that can create a histamine reaction, which then that could create a migraine or a headache or rashes or itch, you know, or just itchy skin or just any kind of histamine reaction. So I haven't really seen that too much when you're customizing the HRT, but you're right, the estradiol patch, I've seen that.
I wouldn't say it's notorious for that, but it certainly, you know, happens enough. I have not seen that with a bias where using, let's say someone was on the patch having migraines and now biased or something, the dosing is not high enough. So there's a little bit of a drop off. Migraines get worse. And I've had a few cases where the rhythmic dosing actually really helped their migraines quite a bit. Where you think that, you're just kind of raising those levels you know that it's menopause induced because they never had a history of migraines before, you know, their late 40s or early 50s. That's when I've probably seen the most. Would you have agreed that that's something that was the most common, or I don't know if it's the most common.
You mean as a symptom?
Yeah, as a reason for, you know, hormone therapy, right? Because all of a sudden now they're in menopause and they're sort of miserable because they're dealing with these migraines all the time. And maybe the migraine or headache medications don't really work all that well. Or maybe they do, and this is a different way to approach it.
I think if they're having the migraines, you know, they have the other symptoms that are going along with menopause too. Because I will say, you're right, you know, when I first went into menopause, it was a weird feeling to get a headache. Like, where is this coming from? I've drank plenty of water. I slept last night. But it's like this weird, for me, it was just kind of like a headache enough that you could still do everything that you wanted to. You could still drive a car. You still, you know, still go about your errands or even work. But it was just this headache there where other women, like you're saying, that are prone to migraines, it was like, you know, that can be like debilitating.
Yeah. And I don't know. I don't know the difference between experience it myself between a headache and a migraine. I would just say a migraine is just a little bit more of an intense headache.
Well, some people say it's awful. You know, they have to go in a dark room. They're nauseous. They're throwing up because it can make you so nauseous. Migraines can be really debilitating.
Now I understand it from that level, just from feedback that we've received from people, like, you know, there is a there's a definite distinction.
But you've never had one. Like
no, that's what I'm saying. You know, I've had lots of headaches, mm-hmm. you know, over the years, you know, too much head trauma when I was younger, playing football and stuff. But never really had what I would classify or what I would describe as an actual migraine. But the people that we've had over the years, I mean, you know, they're sort of miserable. Like they're, you know, it really is debilitating. It can really have a major impact on quality of life, especially now the premenstrual one we were talking about earlier. You're getting a headache, a really bad headache or migraine every 4 weeks. Well, there's probably a female component to that. Those prostaglandins, you know, those are kind of inflammatory molecules, changing blood vessel diameter or, you know, contraction and dilation. And I don't know enough of the physiology there. But, you know, like I said, the hormones sort of playing the sex hormones, the estrogen, progesterone sort of playing a role on some of that. And just maybe the inflammatory burden on the body in general might make it. And I even honestly, now that I think about that, even the fluctuations to blood sugar and insulin can certainly play a role in some of those, the manifestations of some of those things. Something to, you know, consider if you are dealing with headaches and or migraines.
You mean during menopause?
Well, maybe what I was just saying, the blood sugar fluctuation or insulin status, that might be more on the menstruating female side, right? They're, maybe not if they're having them. Now, if you're having the headaches and migraines frequently, that's where I would look at blood sugar insulin status. As that driver of that mechanism, if it's happening once every 3 to 4 weeks, now there's probably a female hormone component to that. Now you get into menopause and they both could sort of be happening there. Maybe not the cyclical part every 3 to 4 weeks because they're not cycling anymore, you know, but it could still be the blood sugar insulin status. For example, someone's hangry, right? Someone's got low blood sugar. Because their blood sugar crashes after a carb-heavy meal, a very common classic sign of that is to get a headache, right? You know, so there's some other factors that need to be considered there, you know, to sort of level some of those things out, in addition to just using HRT.
And one other factor that I wanted to kind of talk about, which was a little bit about with some of the members in our community, is DIM, what is it? D-indole methane, you know, it's really popular. DIM's a very popular supplement right now. It helps, you know, it helps phase one liver detoxification. It can help, you know, pull down or detoxify your estrogen metabolites, especially the not so good estrogen metabolites. But if somebody's having a low level of estrogen, so say like in perimenopause, somebody's estradiol is just starting to drop because that's just what happens in perimenopause. Mm-hmm. It goes up, it goes down. Is it starting to drop? You add that too much DIM on there. I've noticed that can actually exacerbate estrogen deficiency symptoms, like low. It can mm-hmm. kind of push the envelope on low estrogen symptoms. So that was one concern, is maybe the DIM might have been exacerbating the migraines. Yeah. Now I love to use DIM in lower doses, especially for puffiness, you know, for the breast tissue, for the uterine lining, for women that were trying to get those estrogens out. But I think for some people that DIM might be exacerbating it. So that's one thing that, wanted to kind of touch on for people, because they'll be like, oh, let me go take some DIM. And all of a sudden mm-hmm. they're getting worse migraines.
Yeah. So you wouldn't really want to use DIM in a menopausal woman necessarily, unless you're using it to curb or to steer those metabolites. So the 2-hydroxyestrone, the 4-hydroxyestrone, the 16-hydroxyestrone. Alpha. What's that?
Oh, hit 16 alpha?
Estrone. I think it's 2-hydroxy.
Yeah, 2-hydroxy, 4-hydroxy, and 16 alpha.
Oh, 16 alpha. Okay. Well, the 16 alpha doesn't really matter much. That
pretty
one's
neutral.
Like, yeah, that one's just sort of, it's sort of benign. It's not good or bad, it's just sort of neutral. The 4-hydroxy metabolite is the one that women don't want.
Yeah.
Right. So use the DIM to steer that mm-hmm. towards the beneficial one. I know there's some tests out there that can actually look at the breakdown of those metabolites, which can be, you know, highly, you know, helpful, especially if a woman is having some symptoms or is prone in the past to having estrogen dominant kind of symptoms, that using DIM in that case would be reasonable. So I guess there is a good use case for using it in menopause. But maybe the other way to use that is those estradiol spikes that are happening in perimenopause. You're trying to tone down those estradiol spikes. Is that scenarios where you would use it?
Yeah, I mean, in for menopause and HRT, I use DIM quite often.
Yeah, right.
I don't use too high a doses kind of for that effect, that I don't want to push that estrogen, you know, depletion in some respects. I don't even know if I'm using that right, but doing DIM can be really nice for the estrogen sensitive tissues. And like you said, downregulating 4-hydroxy estrogens and upregulating 2-hydroxy estrogens. So I think that DIM can be really utilized beautifully in menopause with HRT, just given doses. And then in perimenopause, I think what I end up doing is I end up cycling DIM a little bit. So you can cycle it where you can go higher doses for so many weeks, and then you down regulate that, bring down to lower doses, maybe stop, do a little bit of a supplement holiday, and then start back on that. So
you do that just, lower dose versus in the follicular phase, higher dose follicular, lower dose luteal? How would you do that?
In menopause, if I'm doing static dosing, then I'm not, you know, they're not in a luteal or a follicular phase. Yeah, yeah. So in menopause, it's
You said perimenopause.
But perimenopause, I'll cycle it across the board, because I do think sometimes taking a supplement holiday is just nice for your liver and for your system anyway, and don't regulate receptors. But for perimenopausal women, I think DIM could be really helpful, especially with those estrogen spikes. But maybe doing a little bit of a lower dose, and then especially those times in perimenopause, ovulation or the ovulation time is where they'll get a trigger for a migraine. That's super common, and also in that luteal phase.
Mm-hmm.
So using the DIM a little bit differently, a little bit lower, so when that drops, they're not getting the migraine. So you're right, cycling it throughout the month, or even just having a lower dose. I also love to add in magnesium glycinate. Like, that's really nice for just relaxing that kind of that tone, that muscle tone. So it relaxes. That can be really helpful for people with migraines. So just taking magnesium glycinate all month long is really nice for that. B vitamins also help with that. I use a lot of B complex and B vitamins on that. And even vitamin D can be really, really nice for that, just to kind of, so there's so many other little kind of complementary things. That's why I kind of wanted to talk a little bit about the supplements, on what could be, you know, helpful and what would need to be monitored, like the DIM.
Sure. DIM is, you know, not complicated, but it, you know, you have to sort of know when to use it, when not to use it. Now you said something a second ago, triggered a thought. Now I just lost the thought. The perimenopausal woman, I'm gonna have to pass, so I'm gonna send it back over. I lost my train of thought, and I don't want to wreck the wreck the episode. So it'll come back to me in a second. The minute you start talking, it'll trigger what I was gonna say all over again.
But it is interesting, because I do feel like, you know, estradiol, you know, and when the estradiol, because it's really more about the estradiol, when that really drops, that can trigger migraines in women, and then of course then they go run off and take some NSAIDs or when is it ibuprofen or a Tylenol, and not that that's bad. I mean, absolutely. If you have a headache and you can take that and that can get rid of it, no problem. But it is really common. But I do find, like I said, the perimenopausal women, they're the one that are kind of stuck in that tough spot, where I do feel like the progesterone is huge. So taking progesterone in perimenopause is awesome. But also sometimes you can even use a little bit of just a really low dose of a Biest, or even like a 90. A lot of times in perimenopause, I'll use a 90-10 ratio, where 90% of the cream is estriol E3 and then 10% is estradiol, and do just a really, you know, like low dose, like a 2 milligram split up twice a day. And even that's where I feel like, you know, which we always talk about, we have the perimenopause, right? We have perimenopause. And then when you're just coming out of perimenopause, but you're not in menopause, that's that in-betweener phase. That, I think, is really difficult because they definitely need some form of estrogen, but you have to be very careful on how you dose that.
Because they're still menstruating. Yeah. Those are always the challenging ones. And those are the ones that don't really fit into either category completely. They're like I said, they're in between. Now I remember what my question was. Just as sort of off, I knew it would come back to me as soon as you started talking. You mentioned something about ovulation time and perimenopause. Do you think that women that are in, if they self-proclaim they're in perimenopause, do you think they're actually ovulating, or isn't that sort of the definition of perimenopause, is that they're no longer ovulating?
I think they're ovulating. I think they are, not all the time, So when you go into perimenopause, you're going to have less ovulation. And then when you go into that in-betweener phase, there's going to be more what they call, you know, anovulation or no ovulation. But the body still understands that it's cycling. Like every single cell in our body will cycle, you know, for the rest of our lives, just like, you know, the moon around the earth and the earth around the sun, everything is cycling. Mm-hmm. So I feel like even though that, and this is the tough part, is when someone's in perimenopause or maybe an in-betweener and they're just coming up to that time where their body thinks it's supposed to ovulate. So, you know, that LH level is going up, but there's no corpus luteum on the ovary, so no egg left, but the body thinks it's supposed to. I think that can be very triggering for a migraine.
True.
And I think that's because right before ovulation, that estradiol is supposed to go up high to trigger that egg to leave the ovary to create that corpus luteum. And then progesterone is secreted from the corpus luteum. So what you see is, I think, you know, that estradiol might go up really, really high because it's really trying to get an ovulation to happen and it's not happening.
Because the FSH is high, so it's really pushing
the
estradiol.
It pushes that. And so that estrogen goes up really high when that, you know, right before what's supposed to be ovulation time, and then it crashes, there's no ovulation, and boom, there's a big, terrible migraine.
Yeah. So at that, so you'd be having two things going on there. You'd have a really spike of estrogen and then there'd be no ovulation, right? The ovulation comes from the release of the egg, mm-hmm. right? The corpus luteum is the part that the body, the ovary produces that actually creates the progesterone. So if that doesn't happen, you have too much of one for a period of time, not enough of the other, too much estradiol, not enough progesterone. And now you're sort of in that.
And then that estradiol just plummets.
And then the estradiol, and the estradiol falls right off because it was, in some ways, because of that surge, the crash on the other side is just as significant. So you're right. Now I understand what you're saying. So on the back end of that, you're having a migraine potentially because both of those hormones have sort of fallen off the cliff. One's not there to begin with because you're not ovulating anymore. Okay, so a woman that is, you know, post 45. Right? Anywhere in that window, they could be, they might not be, but as the closer they get to 50, the likelihood of them not, or maybe the worse their symptoms are, the less likely they are to be, the less likely they are to be ovulating, right? I guess is what I'm asking.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So like I said, perimenopause, mm-hmm. there's not as much ovulation. And then as an in-betweener, right before you go into menopause, it's pretty much way less ovulation. I mean, every once in a while, there's still an egg in there. You know, there's still some eggs.
Yeah,
in the
maybe,
ovary.
Maybe. Yeah.
Every once in a while, that can happen. But then you go into menopause, and then the ovaries have, you know, retired, and mm-hmm. rightly so. You know, job well done. go to Hawaii. But that's why I always like, it's so interesting is, you know, with hormone replacement therapy, I always say once you go into menopause, that's when it gets easier because then we have control of the whole scene.
Sort of easier.
Yes, but before that, when the ovaries are like, we're going to work a little bit, we're going to take weekends off, we're going to just work part-time.
That's hard to work around.
It is. It really is. So that is one thing. And I've had some women, too, is once they go into menopause, I'm like, okay, this is going to be easy. Not right. that it's easy, but it's, you know.
It's mm-hmm. easier.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's easier. That in-betweener phase can last, you know, a good number of years and be, you know, very. For the particular one, for some, they find just give them, you know, some treatments, they respond well. And there's that, you know, there's that group that, that you have to be very careful and very delicate because too much one way and not enough the other way. And, you know, now you're creating problems as you're trying to solve other problems, mm-hmm. you know, as far as what HRT you're using. So, the migraine stuff or the headache/migraine thing does come up quite often. You know, so hopefully this episode was at least shed some light on the idea. Do you have anything else to comment or add from your notes there?
Maybe next time.
As you see, my page is blank. I always like to have a legal background, but I don't have any notes on mine. You got all the notes today.
But maybe next time we'll go into a little bit more about supplementation. I mean, HRT can be super helpful mm-hmm. for perimenopause if you're in between perimenopause and meno or in menopause, you know, HRT is awesome, but also there's lots of supplements and lifestyle and, you know, working on sleep. And I had mentioned about the DIM. It's like a little DIM can be a little bit of a double-edged sword, the magnesium mm-hmm. glycinate, vitamin D, and checking vitamin D levels, and then also, you know, doing some B complex. And like you had mentioned about balancing your blood sugar and your insulin might be more important when you're having sort of these hormonal upheavals than it is, you know, when you're younger. So maybe at some point, if anybody's interested, please write a comment. We'll circle back around to some of that stuff.
Yeah. I'm sure that this is, like you said, it's not that we've overlooked it. I mean, it's just one of those things that you, when you're dealing with women in menopause, nothing is out of bounds as far as the symptoms that they can experience. And I think that you and I don't understand that enough, mm-hmm. even though we see those problems and we sort of address them in particular ways. But I don't think that everyone else understands, you know, it's, and I think we're way beyond the point that it's just about hot flashes and night sweats, right? And in menopause, you know, we've talked about the joint pain issues and the frozen shoulder and all these other things that would never be correlated or attributed to menopause in the past, but now because all these women are talking about it and there's all this discussion that's, oh, I have that too, I have that too, I have that too, and then now there's some research to support some of those things. So the, you know, the symptom profile for a menopause woman is kind of you know, it's not all the same, right? Not every woman manifests the same way. So trying to be able to tease that out and identify what is related to the lack of hormones in menopause and what is something else that, you know, would be treated in a different way. And I think we're just beginning to understand that, both on the conventional side, you know, understanding all the potential issues, and certainly the migraines are part of that for sure. So until next time, again, if you have any questions about migraines or any experience with migraines, I'd love to hear. Hopefully that it's not too debilitating, but love to hear people's comments or questions about that. You can also visit our website, progressionhealth.com. Use Ask a Doctor tab. You can ask your question anonymously there, if I can spit the word out. But until next time, I'm Dr. Mackey.
And I'm Dr. Valerie.
Take care. Bye-bye.